Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicheri, and former NFL scout and now of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. As always, we've got our producer, Justin Stein, with us. And today we are guestless, and we are back reorienting all of our energy towards each other as training camps are open.
And an actual football season, yeah.
Yeah, we got a real football season coming, at least it seems like so far. I'm really curious how cutdowns are going to work. I don't know about you, but usually you read the practice reports coming out of training camp and it's like, oh, okay, great. We really care about the third string quarterback throwing an interception during practice. But with no preseason games, all of a sudden that might be something that's actually more relevant.
Well, it's probably the same amount of relevance as it usually is, which is not much relevance, but unfortunately, it's the most relevant thing we have.
Well, yeah, it's not going to affect your fantasy team, but people could be, you know, people win jobs and lose jobs in camp to an extent, but you have those games at the end of the day.
And depending on COVID, we may be seeing more of those third string quarterbacks and fourth string wide receivers. You know, I wonder if some teams might make their cuts a little earlier just to know, like, this is who we got. These are our players, right? There's expanded practice squads. So they only have to cut down to 69, I think, right? 53-man roster with a 16-man practice squad. With a practice squad now, there are no more limitations on like how long a guy's been in the league. Veterans can be on the practice squad. Anyone can be on the practice squad. The only thing is that they have to go through waivers and be available to any other team as you pass them down to the practice squad. So I wonder whether teams will do their first cuts a little early and get down to that 69 and then be like, these are our guys. But yeah, there's no preseason games to go by. All we have to go by are injuries, right? The injuries are still happening. Poor Dallas losing Gerald McCoy for the year.
Yeah, tough one right there, right off the bat. And I know John Veros, our injury expert, he's been watching it in baseball as everybody's been coming back. I don't think he's been out on a limb predicting that this sort of thing could happen.
More injuries than usual.
Good news, I guess, on the COVID case count front, that seems to be down. So hopefully that stays that way.
We haven't had any new cases. Like there haven't been new. The only one I can think of is John Ross was possibly someone near him was exposed. So he had to go on the COVID list, even though he didn't test positive himself. And then I think that's the only one. So far, so good for the NFL keeping away from anything like what happened to the Marlins or the Cardinals in baseball.
Yeah, I can't imagine in Seattle what happened where the undrafted rookie had a woman dressed up like a player trying to bring her into the hotel.
You're not going to get away with that stuff this year.
Yeah, I don't know when you get away with that.
And it's easier for the NFL. I mean, it's going to be easier for the NFL to keep these guys safer. In college, where you have these college kids who want to go out and be college kids and mix with the other college kids, right? I mean, that's the biggest threat to college football is not the athletes themselves. It's like the other college kids. But in the NFL, I think these people are going to do a better job of keeping separate from the other people in their lives. And I don't think we're going to make it through the season without any outbreaks, but hopefully there'll be a lot fewer outbreaks.
Yeah, hopefully we can get through it safely. And I'm with you on that one. All right, but enough of that. We did that stuff last week. Let's talk football now. And we wanted to talk about just a couple of little random topics. So why don't you want to kick it off with anything you want to discuss?
Well, I thought it would be interesting to go through the top projected teams and the bottom projected teams and get your thoughts on which ones you think are most sort of subjectively likely to us to be completely wrong about. Like, which team do we think subjectively could be the big surprise, even if the numbers don't point to it? Because the numbers, let's be honest, the numbers don't usually point to the big surprise. That's why the big surprise is the big surprise, right? It's because it's a team that was really bad last year and maybe added a player or two, but you don't see how that suddenly turns into 10-6, and then it does. So it's interesting to kind of go through the bottom projected teams and say, okay, out of these teams, which one can you best tell the story of this is how they overcome a bad projection?
So there are a couple of things that jump out to me. The first place I went to when I said teams on the lower end projections that I think could be higher, I went straight to the Packers and the Vikings in the NFC North. I think both those teams are legit. I think they're Super Bowl contenders. I think they have what it takes or better at the quarterback position. When you look at Aaron Rodgers, I think he had a better season than people discuss last year. I think there are a lot of things that were going on around him, and Total Points kind of agrees with this story that the offense's ills were not a lot of the times Aaron Rodgers' ills. So I do think that with some health and with some of the offseason moves that they've made, with more of a commitment to playing in 21 and 12 personnel, and what I think the direction that I want to go in there with an offense that looks more and more like what they're doing out in San Francisco, I like that team. And a lot of the same things you could say about the Vikings. I like Gary Kubiak. I like what that system does wherever it goes. I think it's a really strong way to run an offense in the NFL. So I don't think I'm shocking anybody by saying that I like those teams and I think they're legit contenders. But when I did look at when I looked at it from top to bottom, those ones being on the bottom of the 50 percentile were two that definitely jumped out to me.
Well, let me ask you about the worst teams, because I was thinking about the teams that are really like at the, I don't think anybody would be surprised if it turned out we were wrong about Green Bay and Minnesota sinking back to mediocre. Because, yeah, I mean, the quarterbacks are really good there. But here are the eight bottom teams in our projections as far as win projection. Denver, Jacksonville, the Giants and Jets, Cincinnati and Miami, Washington and Carolina. So those are teams that I don't think a lot of people are predicting any of them to be playoff teams this year. But if one of them would be a playoff team this year, which of those eight teams would you think it would be most likely to be?
When I look at that, I definitely don't love any of those teams to make the playoffs, but I do think there's a story that Denver could be that team. I think there are a lot of questions that I have about them, so I'm very reticent to predict that they would be doing really well. But with their receiver situation, the kind of weapons that they put around Drew Lock, if they can actually have a competent offensive line, I think they can they could be an overperformer team, in my opinion. But I think that's slim pickings from that bunch there. I will say the bottom three teams, Miami, Washington, Carolina, I don't like any of those teams to make the playoffs this year, but I do think those are all strong arrow up teams where we're looking at them by the end of the year. And by the end, by this time next season, we're predicting them to be more close to the middle. I think all three of those teams are making decisions that are really moving in a positive direction after making years and years of questionable decisions.
Yeah, I think out of the eight teams that I mentioned, a few weeks ago, I would have said the Jets, because I would have said the possibility of Sam Darnold taking a step forward, even though it's his third year, not his second. You know, he's so young and obviously messed up by the mono last year. And the Jets' defense was better than anybody realizes from last year. The problem is the Jets then went out and lost their two best defensive players. So it's hard to get on any kind of Jets bandwagon, even a like small percentage chance Jets shock bandwagon, now that there's no Jamal Adams and no CJ Mosley there. The funny thing is, I think the one that's easiest to tell the story about is Miami. I think Brian Flores proved that he's a really good coach last year, or suggested at least that he's a really good coach. There's a lot of defensive additions that could make their defense take a big step forward from being the worst in the league last year. And Fitzpatrick could definitely be league average. They could put together a league average offense and defense and somehow manage their way to 9-7 in a down division. I don't think it's that ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I see them as arrow up. I'm looking at the Almanac right now. The win total, the projected win total in there was 6.4. I like them to be close to a 500 team this year. And yeah, you're right. In that division, I could see that team winning it. Going back to the Jets, you know, the good news about what you're saying with the defensive players is Greg Williams is more of a schemer than somebody who's really relied on individuals at any stop of his career, regardless. So, you know, I never want to put coaches ahead of players, but I do think in terms of being able to withstand that, a lot of what Greg's trying to do there, I think he'll be able to kind of scheme around it a little bit, because that's what he does at the end of the day. The worry for me is, and I mean, with Adam Gase in the AFC East, as long as he's been, I just have no faith in his ability to put together a strong team. I think he's gotten teams to about a 500 sort of range. And I think that, yeah, they could be middling there, but for me, I think the Jets are probably at the bottom of the division this year. And I think this is probably Adam Gase's last year. At least they'll have some draft picks going forward to clean up the mess.
Yeah, I know our projections, even after we updated for the Jamal Adams trade and the opt-outs, still have the Jets slightly ahead of Miami, but I like Miami better. No question.
And Miami with Fitz, I just think even if Fitz has a really good Fitz magic year, their ceiling is what, 9-10 wins, something like that?
Yeah, it's not. They're not going to be the 49ers from last year.
Yep. It'll be interesting to watch.
If any of those teams is the 49ers from last year, it's probably Denver, because the defense could be good enough. And if Locke suddenly takes a big step forward, or I guess plays much more like his surface statistics suggest, even though the underlying advanced stats aren't as good for him, that you know, if any of those teams from last year turns into the 49ers from last year, I guess Denver is the best possibility. The Giants don't have the defensive pieces to make it happen, even if Daniel Jones takes a big step forward. And Washington, I guess they have the defensive pieces, but I don't see Haskins taking that step forward.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be really hard to turn things around that quickly. I like where Washington and Carolina are headed. It'd be hard to imagine it this year. Both the New York teams, I'm very down on. You know, I've been a New Yorker my whole life.
Trying to figure out who the Giants' second and third cornerbacks are besides James Bradbury is a chore.
Yeah, I hear you there. All right, let's flip it on its head. And what about at the top of the list? What about the teams that are on top of the rankings?
Here are the top eight teams. So tell me, which of these teams do you think could collapse? New Orleans, Kansas City, and Baltimore, Seattle, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, Tampa Bay, and Dallas.
For me, the teams that jump out are Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, I think the narrative writes itself. Like, that's a high variance thing. Like, we were just talking about, you know, potential high variance team with Denver. You could see them being really good. You could see them being really bad. Or you could see them being pretty good or really bad. I think I could see Tampa Bay being not so good. We could see them taking a step back, the regression of what they were doing last year on defense. Maybe the fit doesn't work out as well as, you know, everybody hopes. So, again, I could see them being a Super Bowl contender, but I worry about that. The team even more so that bothers me is Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, I like what they've done put together defensively. I don't really like where they're at on the offensive side of the ball. And we saw how a Roethlisberger injury really, really derailed them.
Oh, yeah. Any team in the top eight is kind of wrecked with a quarterback injury, except for maybe New Orleans. But
New Orleans or Indy, I'd say.
I think, yeah, Brissett is a reasonably good backup. I think, yeah, if Roethlisberger gets injured, obviously Pittsburgh falls apart. But I think it's like if the quarterbacks are healthy, even there, I think there's a possibility that Roethlisberger comes back and he's not Roethlisberger from 2 years ago, and they could not be as good as our projection. The defense was really dependent on takeaways last year. Yeah, the offense, there are some questions about the offense. Like, is Juju Smith-Schuster ever going to be a true number one receiver?
And if we take those eight teams, and I think we were to, like, list out the quarterbacks, I think at the bottom of the list, projecting forward for 2020, would be Roethlisberger. And I think right above him would be Brady. So I think it makes sense that you look at those two teams as maybe the most likely to drop off.
Yeah, and Rivers, I think, Indianapolis. I don't know why. I feel more comfortable with the idea that the Indianapolis defense is going to end up being like 10th in the league. Like, it seems to me like a not very high variance team, even though you think like Rivers could either be good or he could be bad or they could be stuck going back to Brissett. I don't know why Indianapolis feels like a less variant team to me than Pittsburgh or Tampa, but it does feel less variant. I think some of that is the trust I have in Frank Reich to kind of keep everything even keel.
And Rivers has been with a lot of that coaching staff before. So we have a lot of faith in his ability to kind of learn what they're asking of him there and to be an upgrade. I mean, by definition, he should be an upgrade, right? If they're signing him to take the old guy's job and the old guy's becoming his backup. So I'm with you. I think that they are kind of a little bit lower variance, a little bit safer. It's hard for me to figure out a way. Just they have a strong roster, good depth on both sides of the ball, especially up front. They're a team that's really built well in their front seven and built well with the offensive line. And then I think you see the two quarterbacks there. So even if one of those guys went down, didn't perform, whatever else it was, you feel good about the second guy in line there. And then the other thing is that division, there's nobody else that really makes you think. I know Tennessee had a great season last year. I don't have any faith in Tennessee to be a playoff team this year. I find them to be pretty mediocre overall. yeah, you can figure out if it went like it went last year, how it goes well for them. But that's a little bit lightning in the bottle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be playoff contenders, but I think we're not going to see what we saw in the second half of last year and in the playoffs for 16 games. So I think another thing that matters for these teams is something else we were going to talk about today, and that is depth. Because you talk about reasons why Tampa Bay might collapse. If Tampa Bay gets hit with a lot of injuries, that is a team that has very little depth in a lot of important places. Like there's no backup edge rushers behind Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett. There's basically no backup interior linebackers behind Lavonte David and Devin White. There's very little depth on the defensive line. There's very little depth on the offensive line. There's very little depth at wide receiver. Like, imagine Chris Godwin or Mike Evans gets hurt. Like, everybody they have behind them
they're playing the 5'9" guy, the fast guy. Yeah.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson or Scott Miller. They're slot receiver types. So that's a team that's going to be really dependent on staying healthy. Like, the positions where they have depth are like tight end.
I mean, I think they project to be in 12 personnel a bunch of the time, so maybe they can work it out with that. And especially if you kind of use OJ Howard more like a wide receiver based on the way that you're splitting him out a lot of the time, I think you could scheme around it. But what you can't scheme around is a Tom Brady injury.
Well, yeah, obviously the quarterback, they don't have a very good backup quarterback. It's Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah. And I think looking around the league, I really look into that when I look at the depth discussion, because depth could play such an important role this year. Number one, like we're talking about the quarterback. So teams are separating their quarterbacks, trying to make sure that if one guy gets sick, the other guy won't get sick. We could see that being a thing. We'll see the typical quarterback injuries that we see every year, right? There were, I think, only two quarterbacks in the league last year that made it through all the games for their team without their backup coming in.
I don't remember how many it was, but it's not many.
So those are going to happen. So you got to look at that. And then looking at the full roster and really saying, okay, if there's a position group that goes down here, there, it's very hard to predict what that would look like. But the Ravens, to me, I think are really well built in terms of when you look at the full roster. We already talked about the Colts. We also talked about the Colts and Saints quarterback depth, where specifically if you had a Drew Brees or a Phillip Rivers thing, you feel good about Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill, whatever that situation is. You feel good about Jacoby Brissett. But the Ravens, I think, also when you look around their roster, I think that they've got guys like the opposite of what you were talking about with the Bucs. They've got guys. Their offensive line has to figure out how they're going to respond to the loss of Marshall Yanda. Marshall Yanda has been one of the best offensive linemen in the game for a decade.
But they've got like reasonable possibilities to replace him. Not at the same level, never at the same level.
They've been drafting guys. They've been building a pipeline. So, and theoretically, if Orlando Brown wasn't just a product of Marshall Yanda last year, and he can continue being as good a player as he was, then you look at them and you feel good about how they're built. So I like those teams.
The Saints are a team that I keep talking about having great, great depth, obviously a quarterback with Jameis Winston, but even in other parts of their team, like for example, the Saints, right? These are their fourth, fifth, and sixth off-ball linebackers. Zach Bond, the third round pick, Nigel Bradham, right, who started in Philadelphia a couple years ago, and Craig Robertson, who used to start in Cleveland. Like, those three guys could be your starting off-ball linebackers. They wouldn't be the best group of starting off-ball linebackers in the league, but they wouldn't be the worst. And that's the backup. If Malcolm Jenkins goes down, there's DJ Swearinger. If one of the cornerbacks goes down, there's Patrick Robinson. If one of the offensive linemen goes down, there's James Hurst. Like, there's a shocking amount of depth in New Orleans right now.
Yeah, it's good. It seems that they're really building, not just to fill their roster, but for the inevitability of injuries, which I think is really the way that you have to build in the NFL, and never more so than this year. I want to throw an interesting one at you. I was looking at Buffalo, and I was looking at the quarterback depth charts around the league, just thinking about who would feel good, who wouldn't feel good. And a Josh Allen injury in Buffalo, I think, would be one of the most interesting storylines that we could have this year, right? Buffalo is a real contender in the AFC East, we think. You had them above the Patriots until the Cam Newton signing.
Number one projected defense.
Yeah, the defense looks great. If they lost Josh Allen, I thought, oh man, this team has nobody. You know, what happens? We go to Matt Barkley. Is this Jake from State Farm, you know, taking over the team? And I thought, man, that doesn't inspire confidence. That could really derail their season. But then I also thought, in a way, a Josh Allen injury could be like a Drew Bledsoe injury type situation for them. If, say, Jake Fromm comes in and can perform well. I'm not saying Jake Fromm is Tom Brady. I want to pump my brakes there, but maybe they've been so married in their minds to Josh Allen that it wouldn't be the worst thing if they saw what somebody else looks like as the trigger man.
Barkley had a fluky great game 2 years ago. Like, Barkley had to start 2 years ago and had a fluky, really great game.
So, I mean, crazier things, you know, I don't have very much faith in Josh Allen becoming a really top flight starting quarterback. I know Buffalo Bills Mafia will come at me for that. But I do think, you know, I'm not rooting for an injury, of course, either. And I don't love any of the skill sets behind him. But in a way, you see guys there that probably bring a little bit more above the shoulders than he does. And that might be an interesting look for a team that's built so well on defense.
But it's interesting because they don't bring anywhere near as much below the knee or whatever you would want to say, below the waist. That sounds wrong, but you know what I'm saying. Josh Allen gets a lot of value from running with the football, and Jake Fromm or Matt Barkley would not get that value. And so you'd have to change some of your expectations for what they get out of the quarterback position in Buffalo, because that's a big part of whatever positive value Josh Allen does bring.
Yeah, we totally change. You know, you go more of a distributor, like point guard type back there, as opposed to Josh Allen, who the value that he creates, like you're saying, it's happening with his legs. So I'm with you.
Another team that I think has really good depth that could withstand injuries is the Eagles, which they've already had to the last couple of years, and they've already had to this year with the Brandon Brooks torn Achilles. But like, the, you know, they were able to re-sign Jason Peters, and they've got like Matt Pryor, and they've got a couple of like offensive linemen around. And then, you know, they don't seem to have great starting receivers right now, but they go deep with kind of good guys. Like, the Eagles are deep with a lot of kind of good guys that, like, you know, you wouldn't want to start, but if you had to play them as backups, that's pretty good.
Yeah, like they're above replacement level players. Like, they've got,
or they're replacement level, but they're not like below replacement level players.
Right. It's an interesting concept. We've been talking about this a lot actually on the baseball side about how war works, and the concept of replacement level for, say, the Yankees this year and the Orioles is really different. Like, a replacement level player on one of those teams is just a totally different concept. And I think that's kind of what you're saying here. Like, the replacement level on the Eagles is higher than the replacement level in other places, which means that they're going to be built to withstand things theoretically a little bit better.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of other teams that stand out to me as not having a lot of depth. Are there any that particularly stand out to you as where you're like, there's really poor depth, not specific positions. Like, we know the Pittsburgh quarterback position, you know, there's guys back there, but they played really badly last year. But is there any other team where overall you're like, yeah, this team can't take a lot of injuries?
Where I just worry about the roster?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Because Tampa Bay stands out so much to me. That's why they're the one team that I brought up. But
yeah, I look at teams that really don't, like the teams that can withstand it a little bit more. I see those jump out to me. I think that the status quo is that a lot of teams are vulnerable to that. And I just keep, my eyes keep going back to the quarterback position. And I look at a team that thinks, you know, the Jaguars, I don't know really how they go into this season. I get going in with Minshew as your guy. I don't get going in with Minshew and really nothing else as an alternative.
I don't get going in. Yeah, that, I mean, yeah, that's because their alternative is a first round pick next year, right? it's more like the teams that we think are going to try to be playoff contenders that surprised me, which is Tennessee finally signed Trevor Siemian. So that's a reasonable backup. But the Rams, John Wolford is their backup quarterback.
Yeah, not inspiring a lot of confidence there with John Wolford.
Yeah, he's an undrafted free agent out of Wake Forest who's never played. Like, if Jared Goff goes down, they're in big trouble.
Part of me still believes that Logan Woodside is going to like show up for a few games this year. Maybe Tannehill gets injured, something goes on. But I keep having that creeping feeling that we're going to see Logan Woodside take NFL snaps.
Do you have a thing? Like, do you like Logan Woodside in college, or is you just like, it's just like a weird inkling?
Logan Woodside performed really well in some of our advanced stats when he was in college, a good, accurate sort of quarterback a lot of the things that the advanced analytics look for with a guy. Obviously, he was doing that against lower level competition at Toledo. He's a guy that I have a little bit of a thing for. At the end of the day, I think he's physically limited. I think his physical limitations probably make him project to be more of a backup type quarterback for his career. But he still is my favorite quarterback on Tennessee's depth chart, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, the Titans have some positions where they've got good depth and other positions where it's kind of questionable. They've got some reasonable offensive line depth, but like if their top three wide receivers go down, if one of those ties goes down, they're down to Khalif Raymond, who's basically a kick returner, and then just like a bunch of guys nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, with the contenders, it's pretty interesting to look at. The Seahawks are a team that I think could be in some danger to that degree. You know, on one level, it's like if they have Russell Wilson, they're always a contender. But if things really, really were to thin out up front for them, I could see that being a problem.
Yeah, they've got a lot of like offensive linemen extra because they signed Brandon Shell and then Cedric Ogbui, although you don't want to actually play him because he's terrible. And they've got that guy, Ethan Pokic, who was a second round pick a couple years ago and has never quite settled in. But then their defense does not have a lot of depth. And of course they have the pass rushers is like Bruce Irvin and I guess LJ Collier, who was a first round pick last year. But then behind that, there's really not much. Their defense doesn't have a lot of depth. The defense is where they're really having depth problems.
Right. Really strong up the middle, of course. But yeah, I keep coming back to it and I keep actually thinking a lot of the teams, the top contenders, Kansas City, I think they have a lot of depth on their roster. I think Baltimore has a lot of depth on their roster. I think the Cowboys have a lot of depth on their roster. So the teams that I look at like that, I feel good about all of those teams.
You like the drafting of guys a year or two ahead, you know, to get them ready. So like, you know, the Cowboys have like Connor McGovern, who they took in the third round last year. So he's there if one of their offensive linemen goes down. And they've got Neville Gallimore, who they took in the third round this year. And he's there. Well, now he'll probably have to play because of the Gerald McCoy injury. And they took a couple cornerbacks in the draft this year. And they seem to be doing a good job of preparing ahead of time for like holes that will open up in the roster down the line. And the Saints do that very well.
Drafting for that position flexibility, you know, drafting for that depth. And then developing that depth into ideally somebody that can become a starter for you. That's the way to go. All right. Let's sign out at this point. We want to thank the listeners. Thank you all for listening. Please remember to subscribe, rate, review, and tell your friends about the Off the Charts Football Podcast. You can go to footballoutsiders.com for lots of great content. And you can follow Aaron and the guys at FB Outsiders on Twitter. Sports Info Solutions is gearing up for the season with our video scouts in training now. You can get a free trial of the SIS Data Hub Pro by visiting pro.sisdatahub.com. It's got all kinds of filters and advanced stats, more than you'll know what to do with. So check that out. A free week-long trial is yours.
Don't forget to check out the Sports Info Solutions Baseball Podcast. On this week's episode, we had ex-Steelers and now Twins analytics head Karim Kassem on. And he discussed one of his favorite players to work with during his time with the Steelers.
My favorite athlete all time, you know, that I think I had a chance to watch is probably Ryan Shazier. Ryan was one of our players with the Steelers. He was also our defensive play caller. And so a lot of the analysis that I was doing, you know, directly impacted what he was doing on the field, which is really cool to see. Incredible athlete for a guy in the middle of the defense to affect the game the way he did just as a fan. It was really pleasurable. But then also that personal connection because I was working with him so closely. Because he was this curious person that was picking up information as much as he could.
For my co-host Aaron Schatz and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.